very important thing, and it always has been throughout the history of mankind. In Romans, the 13th chapter, it says, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those who exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who oppose will receive condemnation for themselves. For rulers are not a cause for fear, for good behavior, but for evil. Do you not want to have fear of authority? Do you not want to have fear of authority? When you don't have fear of authority, you have anarchy. That's what's happened in America for the whole last year. They don't fear. They don't fear. Do you not want to have fear of authority? Do what is good and you will be praised for the same. Government is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. It does not bear the sword for nothing. For he is a minister of God, an avenger of who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. For it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sakes. We pay taxes, it says. We give custom whose custom due and honor whom honor is due. Not all governments are legitimate, are they? You go back in the history of mankind, and we have under the dispensation of human government, under what we call the Noahic age, we have a responsibility. We scatter and multiply, and they didn't scatter, and there's a confusion. But also, the government was established to protect people from each other. The government is established to protect the good from the bad, not the bad from the good. And that we have so much rapidly today. Now, citizenship is very important. Paul, in the 22nd and 23rd chapter of the book of Acts, they were about to flog him and inquisition him. They were going to torture him, or going to subject him to torture or to interrogation by torture. He said, "I'm a Roman citizen. Can you do that?" No. Sharon and Marilyn and I were talking a few minutes ago, and I've been in foreign countries. Sharon grew up in foreign countries. And at one time, if somebody was going to arrest you or do something to you in some foreign country, you say, "I'm a United States citizen." And they would back off. And then you would go to the embassy in that country. If there was something wrong, you would be protected. Paul was under protection of the Roman Empire. Not everything that American government has done has been good. But it's our government. And we as citizens, whether you're born or where you are, or become a citizen rightfully. And I believe we have the greatest plan for immigration that's ever been. But they don't want to follow it. The ruthless outlaw faction in our country wants to bring in everybody and pad the ballot boxes and make there no what we call integrity in voting. Voting is a right and it's a privilege. And if you let an illegal or a non-rightful person vote, then you're erasing a real citizen's right and their vote. Now, in American history, when we go to school, sometimes we get a little smidgen of history. And we've studied 8 presidents so far. And all these presidents in some way have been heroes. And we come to William Henry Harrison. Now, he was 68 years old when he became president. But the sad thing about it is he only lived 1 month into the presidency. William Henry Harrison was born February the 9th, 1773, and he died April the 4th, 1841, 1 month after he became President of the United States. William Henry Harrison was born in Charles City, Virginia, a son of a founding father, Benjamin Harrison V, and he was the grandfather of Benjamin Harrison, the 23rd President of the United States. He was the last president born as a British subject until Obama came in. He was the last president that was elected that was not born a United States citizen. Now, I know there was a lot of controversy with Obama because Obama, when Obama ran for the Senate, he told us, he told the world that he was not a natural citizen. That he, his one of his whole platform is that he had become a citizen of the United States and that he had become a ruling part, the Senate. And then when he ran for president, now one time or the other he lied. Either he lied when he became senator or he lied when he became president. I don't know which one it was. But if he wasn't a citizen, which he said he wasn't when he was becoming a senator, then he lied when he was senator or a president. One or the other was a lie. But this man here was a citizenship of the British Empire when he was born. He was born in 1773. We didn't have the Declaration of Independence till years later, 1776. Now, his whole career was built upon military. The man was a military man all of his life, basically. He fought in the War of 1812 and in the Battle of Tippecanoe. And the whole slogan there when he was running for president was Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Now, he had made many, 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 as he was the ninth president of the United States from March the 4th, 1841 to April the 4th, 1841. He was a United States Senator from Ohio in office from 1825 to 1828. He was a member of the Ohio Senate and he was in office in 1819 to 1821. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives in Ohio's 1st District in office from 1816 to 1819. He was the first governor of Indiana Territory from 1801 to 1812. He was appointed by John Adams. He was a delegate to the U.S. House of Representatives from the Northwest Territory from 1799 to 1800. He was the second secretary of the Northwest Territory in office 1798 to 1799. His cause of death was basically pneumonia. Oh. But really what killed him was the bad medical practices of his day. They bled him to death. He was a Democratic Republican before 1828, and then he became a Whig from 1836 to 1841. His wife's name was Anna Sims from 1795. And he had 10 children by her. He had 10 children. He was educated at Hampton Sydney College and the University of Pennsylvania. He also earned a Congressional Gold Medal. His years of service in the military were 1791 through 1798, 1811 and 12. And he fought the British and he fought the Shawnee. He fought the Indian Wars. He was born into a very wealthy slave-owning family. He was the first Whig president. And he believed in pro-slavery. He believed that slavery and servitude in America. He even believed in white slaves. And that's what's called indentured servants. And when he brought in many of the different countries coming into America, the territory, he tried to make them slave states or slave territories. He studied English, Latin, Greek, and French. And he was fluent in these languages. He actually had gone to school to become a doctor. But he couldn't finish the school because his father died and he found out he didn't have enough money to finish his medical school, so he joined the army. He was the oldest person to assume the presidency of the United States until Ronald Reagan did in 1981. And he was 1 year older, 69. Many times, because of his short ranking as a president, they don't even rate him as a president in history because he was only president for 1 month. He was the seventh and youngest child of his family. Benjamin Harrison V and Elizabeth Bassett Harrison. He was born on the Berkeley Plantation. And his family home was along the James River in Charles County, Virginia. His family was a prominent political family of English descent, whose ancestors had been in Virginia since 1630s. So you know that they had a lot of slaves. His father was a Virginian planter, and he served as a delegate to the Continental Congress from 1774 to 1777. And he signed the Declaration of Independence. His father served in the Virginia legislature and as the fifth governor of Virginia from 1781 to 1784. In the years during and after the American Revolutionary War, Harrison's older brother, Carter Bassett Harrison, represented Virginia in the House of Representatives in 1793 to 1799. Harrison was tutored at home until he was age 14. And then he went to the Hampton Sidney College, a Presbyterian college in Virginia. He studied there for 3 years, receiving a real classical education, Greek, Latin, and French, and of course English, and logic and debate. He started in the University of Pennsylvania in 1791, where he wanted to become a doctor. But if you remember, doctors back then and medicine back then was very, very primitive. American Indian medicine was much better than the American U.S. medicine. This is the second president to die from bad treatment when they were Cherokee medicine men could probably have saved them. In August 16, 1791, Harrison was commissioned as an ensign in the Army in the 1st Infantry Regiment within 24 hours of meeting Lee. He was 18 years old. He was assigned originally to Fort Washington in Cincinnati in the Northwest Territory. Northwest Territory is not that way. The Northwest Territory at that time, it's coming from the East Coast. So that's Indiana, Michigan, and all this. And it was all called Indian Territory or Indiana. Indiana means Indian Territory. Indiana, Chicago, Illinois, all of those names were all... This was the Indian Empire. These were the civilized tribes. They had great cultures back there. He engaged in the ongoing Northwest Indian Wars. Harrison was promoted to lieutenant, and then after that, major general. He was an officer in the American frontier. He participated in Wayne's decisive victory at the Battle of Fallen Timbers on August the 20th, 1794, which ended the Northwest Indian War at that time. Harrison was a signer of the Treaty of Greenville in 1795, and as a witness to Wayne and the principal negotiator of the U.S. under the terms of the treaty, a coalition of Indians ceded a portion of their lands to the federal government, opening two-thirds of Ohio to white settlement. Following his mother's death, Harrison inherited a portion of his father's Virginia estate, including approximately 3,000 acres of land and several slaves. He was serving in the army, and he sold all of his land and the slaves to his brother. Harrison was promoted to captain in May of 1797 and resigned from the army June the 1st, 1798. William Henry Harrison met Anna Toothill Sims of North Bend, Ohio in 1795 when he was 22 years old. She was the daughter of Anna Toothill and Judge John Cleves Sims, who served as a colonel in the Revolutionary War. Now, the judge did not want them to get married. He told William Henry Harrison, "How are you going to support my daughter? What are you going to do?" And he didn't want his daughter drug around all over in the army. So he objected to the marriage, and they eloped. See, they even eloped back in the 1700s. The judge confronted Harrison later and sternly demanded how in the world he's going to support a family. And Harrison told his father-in-law, "By my sword I shall do it, and my right arm." He won over his father-in-law finally, and later gave him 165 acres. In North Bend. And it enabled Harrison to build a home for his new wife and start a family. The Harrisons had 10 children. Elizabeth, Bassett, John Cleve Sims, William Henry, John Scott, the father of the future U.S. President, Harrison Benjamin, Mary Sims, Carter Bassett, James Finley. Said Anna was frequently in poor health during their marriage because she had so many pregnancies. But she outlived William by 23 years. Dying in 1864 at 88. Supposedly, Harrison had 6 children by other women in his life. Harrison began his political career when he resigned from the military in June 1798 and campaigned among his friends and family for the Northwest government. And his close friend was serving as Secretary of State, and he helped him to get a recommendation to replace Winthrop Sargent, the outgoing territory secretary, under John Adams, appointed Harrison to the position in 1798. He frequently served as a governor during the absences of the governors. He wanted to be a gentleman farmer, like over a Bleak plantation. He wanted to raise horses. And he wanted to drop the prices of lands. Now, he was getting millions of acres into the United States government that he's taken from the Indian tribes. And he was, I think that he, somewhere around 11 treaties that he instituted with the American Indian people. But one of the things about William Henry Harrison was that he didn't think like an Indian. And even England, they would go among the Indian people and say, "You're going to be the prince. You're going to be the chief." "Me? Yeah. And you're going to sign all this land away and you're going to make a treaty with us." "Well, you don't understand, sirs, because there are no such thing as chiefs among Indians. We're only chiefs for a little while. And when we're fighting or war or something, that's when I'm a chief. Otherwise, I'm just another guy." But they were going to have it that way. When Tecumseh confronted Harrison, he brought 400 of his warriors there. And he told him, "You are getting people to sign the treaties that don't own the land. They are not the owners of the land." Harrison told him, "Well, I'll decide who's the owner of the land. You just shut up," basically. Yeah. Basically, he added about 60 million acres of Indian lands with about 11 treaties. 60 million acres of land. Including a third of Indiana and most of Illinois. The Ohio. And the loss of the lands, especially the Black Hawk War, where Black Hawk tried to stop the infiltration of the people into his land. He made a treaty of Fort Wayne in 1809 and raised the new tensions among when Harrison purchased more than 2.5 million acres inhabited by the Shawnee, the Kickapoo, and the Wea, and the Penkishaw tribes. He purchased the land from the Miami tribe who claimed ownership, which didn't own it. He rushed the treaty process by offering large subsidies to the tribes and their leaders that would be enforced before Jefferson left office and the administration changed. Now, let me tell you something about Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson did everything he could do to end slavery, even though he owned slaves. But you have to remember that some of the slaves that he owned was by Sally Hemings. They were his own children. Sally Hemings was three-quarters white. She did not look black. She looked like his wife because she was his wife's half-sister. And all of his children were 7/8 white and 1/8 black. That's Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson did not want slavery to go into any of this new territory, and Harrison wanted it to go into those territories. He said it would be economically advantageous if it did. What did Jefferson do? Well, he donated money and he established the Bethel Baptist Church. And then the Baptists got in there and spoke against slavery into these territories. He wanted to stop the pro-slavery movements into these new territories. As he went into these new lands, he defeated the tribal forces. He was a hero. During his wars, Tecumseh was killed. Tecumseh and his brother tried to have an Indian camaraderie where all the tribes would get together and fight the infiltration of the white or the U.S. government into their tribal lands. He tried to unite them and fight. And his brother, the one thing about it, you know, false prophets are always false prophets, aren't they? He had a brother that was a false prophet. And in this brother said, if we go to war against these white eye, their bullets and their knives will not harm us. Well, the bullets and the knives harmed them. He was a false prophet. And the Indians began to run and scatter. And finally, Tecumseh was killed. His brother escaped and went up into Canada. More land was added. This Treaty of Spring Wills was added. John Gibson replaced Harrison as Indian Territory Governor in 1812. Harrison resigned from the Army in 1814 and returned to his family in North Bend. He cultivated land. He grew corn. He grew crops and tobacco, all the things that you grow back then in those times. And then he began a whiskey distillery. He started a whiskey distillery. And he began to make whiskey. And then he got under conviction of God because he saw how much alcohol, how much damage alcohol was doing to the people, to the Indians and to the white man. And he repented to God and closed his distillery. And he quit making whiskey. And he asked God to forgive him for doing such a terrible thing as that to make money. He had been a representative to Bogota, Colombia. He found the condition of Colombia saddening, and he reported to the Secretary of State that the country was on the edge of anarchy, including, in his own opinion, that Simon Bolivar was about to become a military dictator. He wrote to rebuke to Bolivar, stating that the strongest of all governments is that which is most free. The strongest of all governments is that which is most free. Calling on Bolivar to encourage development of democracy, in response, Bolivar wrote to the United States, and it said it seemed destined to, by providence, to plague America with torments in the name of freedom. Andrew Jackson took office in 1829, and he recalled Harrison in order to make his own appointment to the position. In the 1836 presidential campaign, he ran, but he lost. They had a lot of different people running. They were running against Martin Van Buren. And Martin Van Buren, we know, was an educated man. Now, sometimes political parties are nothing but liars. Do I hear an amen? Sometimes political parties are nothing but liars. They will pronounce something that is absolutely false. Now, in the 1840 presidential campaign, they called Martin Van Buren the Democratic arrest aristocracy, that he was like a king, that he drank out of golden cups, and that he spent a lot of money in the White House on China and all that, and he drank champagne and all of this. And then they ran Harrison as a country boy that would be happy with a keg of hard cider and a warm fire in a long cabin. Now, Harrison was not a poor man. He was never born a poor man. But they said, he's a common man. He's a little guy. And he's a big rich guy. And here we have the little guy, the poor man, that is satisfied with a keg of cider and a glass beside the fire, and inviting his friends in to a humble meal. What a joke. But the people fell for it. They called him Granny Harrison because he was so old. And Benaiah, by the way, had very long hair. Now, there were bankers. And there were people that wanted to reestablish the U.S. Bank. And the U.S. Bank would basically buy patronship. Anybody would be their patron, they would get loans, and sometimes they didn't even have to pay the loans back, etc., etc., etc. And they told him to shut your mouth, don't say one word, don't you tell them what you believe at all, just stay in your basement and shut up, and we'll run your campaign for you. This sound familiar? Don't you let anybody know what you believe. Don't you dare write anything down. Don't you have one interview. Don't you have one fireside chat. Don't you do anything to let these people know what you really believe. Shut up and stay shut up. Don't you write any letters. No correspondence. Don't you speak to any newspaper man at all. Don't do this. Sound familiar? Now, William Henry Harrison may have been brutal to the American Indians and brutal to the black people in his time as a slaver, etc. But the man loved America. And he believed he had spent most of his life either fighting for the American cause or else working as a lawmaker, and his family had been American patrons and American heroes since America became America. They had a long line of leadership. His grandson would become President of the United States, Benjamin Harrison. He fought with Clay, and many times when he finally got into office on this very slight campaign, you might say, they told him not to say a word. Because he was old, the whole thing was Tippecanoe and Tyler too, and this is where we have the American political campaigns born with William Henry Harrison. Lie all you want. Don't tell anybody what you believe and just wander in like a snake under a door. Now, he was a lot more gentleman and a lot more honest than those people that were backing him. Daniel Webster and Henry Clay tried to use him. Once he got in office, now, by the way, they have him as a thoughtful character, a backwoods woodsman, a pioneer. And yet he was born in this elite, aristocratic family. But that's not what he ran, and that's not how he won his presidency. The backwoods character got up and took the oath of office on March the 4th, 1841, on a cold and wet day. And to prove that he was a strong man and not an old Granny Harrison, he rode his horse and he walked. He wouldn't take a carriage. He rode out, and then he spoke the longest inaugural address in American history of 8,445 words. And it took him over 2 hours to read the message in the rain and the drizzle. And probably it broke down his immune system, and that's how he got pneumonia. But also they look at it now and they look at the records and they think that he might have had fever from the bad water that was, that the septic systems were all running into the river, and the river for the White House had a lot of bacteria and viruses in it. William Henry Clay and his American system, and he's going to reestablish the Bank of the United States and extend its capacity for credit by issuing what? Paper promissory notes. And that's what happened. Here we have promissory notes. You get a piece of paper saying it's worth so much gold. As long as they say it's worth so much gold. The Congress, the Senate, Henry Clay, all of these people were harassing him constantly day and night for positions because they got him in office. They got him in office and they wanted a little gratuity. They wanted a little patronage. And Clay, or not Clay, but Harrison had to say several different times, "Mr. Clay, you are my close friend, but I am President of the United States. I will appoint who I want to appoint." And he told the same thing to Daniel Webster. What he really wanted was to be an honest president and do good for the American people according to what he thought. And his long speech was denouncing what Jackson had done and what his vice president had done, and that he was going to start a brand new Make America Over Again. That sound familiar? Mm-hmm. William Henry Harrison told Henry Clay that I don't want to deal with you anymore, and I only want to address you from now on in writing. Forget, leave me alone. He finally had called Congress together because the country was in such a financial wreck. In March the 26th, 1841, Harrison became extremely ill with a flu or cold-like symptoms. His doctor was Thomas Miller. He prescribed rest, but Harrison couldn't rest. At daytime, they kept coming at him right and left, right and left, right and left, and at nighttime, he wanted to have political parties. So he had no rest. The next day, he was seized with chills during a cabinet meeting and was put in bed. By the following morning, on March the 28th, he had a high fever. A team of doctors were called to treat him. And they began to draw blood from him to get rid of the bad blood and put all type of plasters and things on him. But Harrison would escape early in the morning. What really brought his health down, he would escape early in the morning. He'd go out and buy groceries for the White House and even bought a cow for milk, a milk cow, and brought it in. And he'd do all this before he'd go to work. And all of this was in the midst of a malarial swamp. They put heated suction cups on his body. Does this sound like witchcraft or something? They treated him with castor oil and calomel and mustard plasters and finally boiled a mixture of crude petroleum and Virginia snake root and applied it to him. And all this did was make him weaker and weaker and weaker until he finally died. When he was dying, he wrote a letter and told his doctor to give this to Tyler.
Who?
Tyler, the vice president. Oh. "Sir, I wish you to understand the true principles of government. I wish them carried out. I ask nothing more." Now, after Tyler became president, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether he'd be a temporary president until they elected another one, or that he would be a permanent president. And they fought and argued over this for a long time. And finally, they declared him to be president, and for the rest of William Henry Harrison's presidency. What did he leave us? What did William Henry Harris leave us? What did William Henry Harrison leave us? Well, he reinstituted the Bank of the United States and they issued paper money. Promissory notes. In all reality, as the Indiana Territory governor, he had bargained for and treated for, even though it wasn't exactly according to William Indian culture, he treated for millions and millions and millions of acres of land added to the United States. And he kept pushing the Indians away. In February the 19th in 2009, the U.S. I ran out of voice there for a moment. In February 19, 2009, the U.S. Mint released a ninth coin in the presidential $1 coin program bearing William Henry Harrison's likeness, and a total of 98,420,000 coins were minted. Several monuments have been built to William Henry Harrison. Harrison County, Indiana. Owens County, Indiana. And numerous other towns that bear his name. The Tippecanoe County Courthouse bears a statue in his name. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. President William Henry Harrison did his best for America. He died penniless. The Senate voted that his wife, his widow, would receive his salary of 1 year salary because he had no money. All of the things that he did, all the times that he fought in the wars and everything, he had very little money. He didn't buy his job as president. He fought for it. Even though he was elected on false premises, William Henry Harrison, as a man, was an honest man. Under his best interest, always he considered the United States of America his greatest goal for the advancement of America. He was a hero. He was an imperfect hero, yes, but he was a hero. And even though he's only president for 1 month, he spent his life fighting for America. Many people have come into the presidency in modern times and graft and lies and dishonor, and even murder, mafia. But this man came in president on a false premise, on a false campaign. He wasn't the poor old pioneer out in the cabin, in a log cabin. That's when they started all these smear campaigns back at this period of time. He was born as a British subject and became an American hero. His family fought for America from the very birth of America. Our Father, we thank you for this man in our history, in the good that he did. He was a religious man, as you know, and he tried to do the right thing. The people behind him were ruthless and deceptive, but he did his best. And Father, we thank you for this day and for our country. And please protect it from all those who are trying to destroy it.